The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Good morning, and we'll get to your calls here a little bit later, maybe next hour, especially on Find Your Phone Friday. It's 11 minutes after 6, and we are proud to have Jay Bieber on to kick off the show this morning. He's the Executive Director of Policy at the National Motorist Association. And they are dedicated to protecting American drivers against the tyranny of the anti-car movement. So I'm all in with you. Jay, welcome back to the show. Great having you on.
Oh, pleasure to be back, Bill.
Okay, now I will admit that my only dog in your fight is I did become a member, and I love it. In fact, I just got the latest newsletter a couple of days ago, you know, in the mail here. And, I didn't realize that one of the guys that was probably one of the biggest, what do they call them, radar detector manufacturers ended up passing away. Mr. Valentine, what was that story there? What happened with him? Because he did more for automotive freedom, I think, than a lot of people did.
Yeah, he was a longtime supporter, had been with us for almost forever, since the early, you know, since the 80s. And, you know, his radar detectors were some of the best. He actually started Escort and then sold that company off and then started his own with a radar detector called Valentine One. He was really an innovator, and he really did it because he felt that the folks out there that were getting tickets, a lot of them were getting unfair speeding tickets with speed traps, and he wanted to help with that. And that was really his motivation. He was an engineer, really, really smart guy, and he's a huge loss. It was a sudden passing away. We don't really know exactly, family hasn't really released, you know, what happened. But really, it's a huge loss to the motorist friends. And, you know, everybody should support that company and you know, look into Valentine, the radar detectors, because they are some of the best on the market.
Yeah, definitely wanted to make sure that we didn't forget about that as we went in through our talk here.
Now, appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah, the battle though for automotive freedom, for transportation freedom, because I'm with you in that the individual vehicle, the car, and the trucks and everything that we've grown up with here have been just a huge part of American freedom, and there is such a war against this. And I wanted to talk with you about the latest scheme which is coming out here. In fact, over on streetsblog.org, there was this conversation. I guess they had a call of the gang green folks. I don't know. What is their exact name? Was it the Green New Deal coalition of some sort? They were getting together.
I was going to say it was called the Green New Deal Network, if anybody wants to look them up and see what this group of nutcases are.
And what were the nutcases getting together to do? Because it appears that they're looking at the incoming administration, you know, President Trump, Trump Vance, and they don't care. They want to steamroll them anyway. Oh. And what's going on with them? What are they planning?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we should tell everybody who this group is and what they are. So understand that this is a group of far left climate activists. I mean, we're not talking about like your run-of-the-mill Democrats. We're talking about like socialist groups. And I'll just name some of the groups that are associated with this. The Climate Labor Transit Justice Group, the National Campaign for Transit Justice, Climate Justice Alliance, People's Action, Worker Family Party, you know, the Climate Action Network. I mean, these are, you know, you have to look these people up. They're really like on the far fringes of the left, and they're really just socialist organizations, and their goal is to remake our transportation system and they're what they want. And again, their stated goal is to end car dependence, meaning that not to give you options, but they want to take away your right to use your automobile. So they want to tax it more. They want to charge you for every mile. They want to take away car lanes. They want to do all the things we've talked about on the show before, which is just impair your ability to use your personal automobile, because they believe that the use of the personal automobile is destroying the planet. But it's not just that, because they don't want you to drive. And the way that we know this is part of their plan is they say that they want part of the policy to be to reduce car mileage per year. You know, so the annual mileage that everybody drives, and you can't, and it's, so it's not just enough to go green in their parlance and use electric vehicles. You can't drive your car. So understand that it's not just about, like, hey, it's the environment. They don't want you to drive your car.
That's
what this is about.
Why is there such a inherent left-wing opposition to the individual being able to decide to go when he or she wishes to? Why is that?
Well, I think within your question is the answer, which is that they're the left, they're the far left, and they believe in collectivism. So they don't believe in personal freedom and personal choice. They want everybody to use a collectivist system, meaning that you should be on public transit. So transit is a big thing. And there's nothing wrong with transit in certain cities. Obviously, cities need it. But we're talking about everybody has to use it. It can't be like, oh, well, if it's useful for you and we have the transit lines and it's good and we put them in where they belong or whatever. It's everybody has to use it. No one's allowed to use a car. So this is what I'm saying is when I talk about them being on the fringe, I mean, the National Motors Association obviously is in favor of protecting your use of a personal automobile, but we're in favor of preserving choice. So if we're not out there saying, don't build transit, don't do that, at the expense of other things, don't use the money taxing car drivers to do it, but we're not saying you shouldn't build transit, nobody should be on transit. I mean, obviously, that's not our position because we're not in a far extreme organization. We're just basically saying that leave us alone, leave the vast majority of people who get around by car, which is how most people get around, leave us alone, don't take away the infrastructure that we have, don't tax us out of existence, and just you want to go and advocate for transit, go advocate for transit and, using the money. But what they want to do is, like, for example, this congestion pricing thing that they're bringing back in New York City.
That's right. Hochul just ended up putting that into place. She did cut the rate down to $9 a day rather than 15, right? That's the only change she did.
Exactly. Right? After you pay all the tolls to get into the city in the first place. So this is New York and Manhattan. So it's a charge. We tell people it's a charge to go into lower Manhattan. Now, people from Oregon will probably be like, well, I don't care because it's all the way on the other side of the country. And, I'm not going to drive a car into Manhattan anytime soon. But understand that all of the commerce that happens out of lower Manhattan is going to be affected by that. But also other cities will start doing it. I mean, look at Oregon. They're going
to
do it.
I wanted to interject, if you don't mind. Jay Bieber here once again, Executive Director of Policy at the National Motorist Association. You say Oregonians don't care about this. Oh, yeah, we do. And as a matter of fact, we are going to be made to be caring about this here, Jay, because the plan of replacing the Interstate 5 bridge in Portland, a big part of that is big tolls, and it's really one of the one of the few ways to get across the river to go between Washington and Oregon. Just one of the ways.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
We haven't had any tolls, out here on Oregon roads here yet, but they've been pushing. They've been pushing this drive to want to go to a weight mile tax of some sort, or chipping the car. There was a primary or a preliminary program that they tested out called OreGo, in which they would charge you. Per mile, those sort of things.
Yep.
Now, part of it, I can appreciate that in some respects, wanting to get electric car drivers, and I hate this term, to pay their fair share, right? Because they're not paying anything on fuel taxes or road taxes at this point in time. But they've been so politically favored up to this point. So believe me, what's happening in New York, we can sit around here and laugh and go, ha, ha, ha. Now, listen. The same goals are here, essentially, that you don't want to have your individual freedom. And here in Southern Oregon, especially, we're a rural, semi-rural culture. I mean, there is no bus coming to take us from Cave Junction to Medford, 60, 70 miles. It's just not there. Do they understand this, or does the Green New Deal network not care?
They don't care. They don't want you to use your car. It doesn't matter where in the country. Obviously, they will target the cities first, but the entire state, for example, they want to adopt transportation rules, and those rules will include the state having to reduce everybody's miles that they drive every year. So it's not just they're going to leave the rural folks alone and just focus on the cities. They want everybody to drive less, and the way they'll do that is by, for the most part, pricing, which is if they can get this vehicle mile travel tax in place, obviously that's going to cover everybody in the state. So So that means it'll be more expensive. And as we've discussed in the past, that the goal is social engineering. It's not just to pay people's fair share, because there's plenty of ways to do that. But if you can tax per mile, you can do all sorts of things. You can tier it so you get a certain amount of miles per year. And, of course, you know, people who live in the more rural areas have to drive further, but they don't care. So, you know, they will charge you more after the second tier, and then more after the tier after that. You know, some of the utilities do that in certain areas. And so the goal is to socially engineer through this new power to tax. And, you know, there's Michigan, again, and this wasn't just in the cities, they wanted to do a pilot program where they would charge you more if they determined you could have taken a different form of transportation. You took that small trip to the grocery store, even in your small area, you could have used a bicycle. In their estimation, some overlord has decided that they could, you know, that you should have used a bicycle. You know what? Then, you know, we're going to charge you more for that trip. That's how they want to socially engineer. So we have to be really careful about these people and understand they are really well funded. They're way more funded than we are. You know, we're fighting the good fight, but you know, they've got like folks like Bloomberg behind them because, you know, it's all this climate stuff, and you know, and there's tons and tons. I mean, they are funded to the tune of millions and millions of dollars to get this stuff through. And obviously there's entities that would benefit from this because it's all about the money. So it's developers, it's people that want to change, you know, land use laws. There's people that, you know, some of the unions that would benefit. So, you know, like the workers that work on the train lines and things like that, they're part of this coalition because they, you know, they think they can, you know, get more work.
Well, yeah, this is feather bedding for their particular economic interest. I get that.
Now, it always is, right?
Now you talk about Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, being, of course, a very wealthy, somewhat liberal Republican. I think he's still a Republican. I don't know if he changed his
party. I don't know that he still is.
Changed his party or not. Point being, though, is that I've never seen him go anywhere that wasn't usually a limousine or a private jet and surrounded by a phalanx of gun-toting security. Of course, he's also against firearms, too. What part of this do the Green New Deal coalition people not see as hypocrisy when they see the people funding them that live their lifestyle completely opposite about what they wish to impose on everybody else? Is there any talk about that?
Well, you know what? There isn't within the movement, obviously, because they, you know, that's one of their major funders. But it's also part of this idea, and understand, you know, socialism sounds good to a lot of people, but understand there will be always an elite group who will decide for everybody else. They expect to be part of that elite group, and Bloomberg is certainly one of these people who is an elite, and he, you know, the rules apply to everybody else, for all the little people. But, you know, he's incredibly entitled and feels that he can do whatever he wants, but he's going to spend his money, which is well-earned money, by the way. But he, you know, he's going to spend that money on, you know, on telling everybody else what to do and how to live their lives. And, you know, the guy may, you know, have an R or have had an R next to his name, but he's certainly no fan of personal and individual freedom.
The Green New Deal Coalition also, what role do they have in the attempts that many have talked about, shadowy influences, to get people out of living on rural lands in rural areas and forcing people into urban stack and pack and what we're calling here in Oregon now climate-friendly, equitable communities? Could you comment on that?
Well, I just think of all of the Orwellian terms that they use.
Well, it was an executive order from a past governor. Governor Kate Brown ordered this, and it, in essence, is ordering cities that, hey, you are going to have your little habit trails in your various cities if you're going to be allowed to develop over time.
Yeah. And look, this is a big thing around the country. They did it in Arizona. You know, I don't know how much they were behind this movement, but a developer bought an area in the Mesa area, and they created this car free city. But of course, it's not really car free, because once you get out of this little area, you have to use your car. So they subsidize people to use transit, and people, you know, come in and they park on the periphery, and then you know, and then within the little area you can walk around and stuff like that. So, you know, it's not really car free anyway. It's just sort of made to look that way. But again, it's all part of this thing where they say it right out. They're going to remake our transit and our transportation system throughout the United States. That is their goal. I mean, it sounds like everything else that's coming from the very far left, which is we're going to remake society, we're going to remake America. This remaking everything into their image, you know, this is what collectivists do.
I guess I'm going to translate for you, Jay. It's going to break what works. Well, whatever is working, let's break it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, because they hate what works because they have to tear it down to build what they want to build, which is this supposed utopia that they believe in. But again, it's really all about control over your life. If you look at the underlying thing and you filter it through that lens, it's like, how much more control can they have over our lives? That's why they're doing this.
This is why it's so important to keep apprised of what's going on at the National Motorist Association. What is your main website, by the way? And like I mentioned, I bought a membership, and I think it's well worth it because you are part of this activist group of normal, everyday people. You don't have any Michael Bloomberg's or George Soros's funding, funneling billions to you, but you're working the good fight. How can people find out more?
We appreciate it. Yeah, it's motorists.org. So motorists is plural .org. And, or you can just Google, National Motorist Association. We should mention the membership is very, very inexpensive. As I've said before, it's about the cost of a price, about the tank of gas. So it's $42 a year. And, you know, it's money well spent. You'll never miss the $42, but what we will do for you or, you know, trying to protect your freedoms is invaluable.
And, I appreciate you having, been with Eric Peters. That's how I ended up finding out about you and getting you on in the first place. And I just appreciate the time and you be well. And thanks for the update and, watch out for the Green New Deal Coalition out there to continue
absolutely.
In spite of what President Trump's up to. We appreciate the talk. Thank you, Jay. Be well.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you.
627 KMED 99.3 KBXG. You're waking up this Friday morning with the Bill Myers Show.
Artisan Bakery Cafe invites you to
Age of America
on News Talk 106.3 KMED.
Hi, I'm Mark with Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, and I'm on KMED.
630, Miner Dave. Dave, I had mentioned that your trailer burned down yesterday. You called me just as it happened over in the Iron Gate. Wanted to get a quick update from you. How are you holding up this morning? Where are you today?
I'm at Wairika Motel 6. The Red Cross gave me a debit card, and I could get four nights for what they gave me and a little food.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that the fire department saved for me was my cat and my stepmom's ashes because it was in a metal thing that didn't melt.
So what happened? Did a heater go down? What time did that happen yesterday? I remember you called.
It happened at 8:30 in the morning. I was listening to your show on my phone in my truck.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, I was running the truck. All of a sudden, I thought I'd seen something. I could smell something funny. I thought it was my truck at first. And I looked at my truck, and then I looked up, and my house was on fire.
Wow.
I mean, my trailer. But I call it my house.
Well, it was your house. It was your house. It's where you've been living here. And, boy, that is just I'm so glad, though, that you weren't injured because, I mean, you know, people die in these kind of trailer fires all the time. Must have been a heater or some kind of problem with a heater.
It was a Mr. Heater, and it looks like it malfunctioned.
Oh, man, that's too bad.
They don't know for sure. They know it was the heater. They don't know what caused the heater to do that.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're okay. Now, your cat was saved. Was there another cat that didn't make it, though, if I recall? I remember you saying something about
the person that was taking care of their cat after I was gone went through, and they never found the cat there.
Mm-hmm.
And another guy I had staying in a tent there said that he's seen it, but it might be scared just running around.
Oh, hopefully that cat will show up. So you got about 2-3 days. Hey, I was going to ask you, have you set up, you know, the best thing to do for you would either be to set up a Give, Send, Go or a GoFundMe account. I kind of like Give, Send, Go myself, but can you do that? Because I'd love to help you, but you know, I don't want to run the fundraiser, you know, for you, but, you know, you've been a good member of the radio family. You'd like to help.
I really could use somebody else to run it because I've been kicked off of GoFundMe. That's no good for me. They say I'm too political. It would need to be the one you just said. But
yeah, gifts and go.
I'm not any good at setting that up.
Okay, I'll tell you what. We'll put the call out there, see if there's a community member that would be willing to do that because, you know, to be in charge of gathering up the gifts and go money, okay, and see if we can, if the community can help you out a little bit during this time, okay? I'm just glad that you're alive, okay, that you didn't get hurt
of
that.
You might be able to get a hold of Kirby. He might know somebody.
Okay, I'll get a hold of Kirby then after the show, all right?
All right. Thank you.
God bless, Dave. I know it's a rough time, but I'm glad you at least have a clean, warm, dry place to stay here for the next couple of days as you try to figure out a way back. I mean, boy, listen to the show and then boom, just like that. It's 6:34 at KMED, 99.3 KBXG.
The Best of Southern Oregon magazine presented by Dusty's Transmissions is online.
At CompletedElectricPlus.com.
It's the Bill Myers Show on KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
This is the craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights because I don't want to see. I'm not told and that's gone.
In spite of a new administration coming in, is the swamp getting deeper and stinkier? Well, if you watch cable news, it sure seems that way a little bit. Let's talk with Rick Manning, president of Americans for Limited Government, DailyTorch.com. Rick, welcome back, sir. How are you doing today, huh?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellently. It's interesting watching the shift on the MSNBCs of the world in which now instead of like Trump, literal Hitler, now it's going to be, oh my gosh, our democracy is going to die and we're all going to die, RFK for HHS and all the rest of it. It's kind of entertaining, but boy, he's throwing a lot at the wall. I'm speaking of President Trump, right? He sure is throwing a lot at this with these appointments, wouldn't you say?
Oh, he definitely is. It's a I have challenges with some of them, RFK for one. Because I've actually talked to some of his advisors, and you know they make all these. I've talked to them where they make all these assertions, but the only way you could do anything about anything they claim is additional regulation. And so I'm concerned that under the RFK world, that we'll be fighting regulations that he's putting forward that.
Well, I guess what I'm hearing then is exchanging one form of regulatory tyranny for another. Is that what you're kind of worried about?
Well, the difference is that there'll be an interesting coalition opposing those regulations. Yeah. And I'm not prejudging, you know, you have to look at every single thing, but I've just urged people, look at what is done on a case-by-case basis, and this is what I'm going to do, and determine which ones don't fit, for me, a limited government paradigm. Mm-hmm. And if they don't fit a limited government paradigm, I don't care who's proposing them. I'm going to oppose them. And it's I will tell you, the one appointment that initially I was just kind of like, oh, my gosh. But over the last 2 days, I've really warmed up to was the Matt Gaetz for AG.
I'm glad that you brought that up because I was going to dig into this next. You know, I was trying to understand it at first, and then I've kind of got my head wrapped around it. Now, there's two lines or two ways of thinking about this. This could be where Trump realizes that there's enough trouble with this guy that I'm going to throw this out there, and then I get the person that I really want in there. I don't think that's President Trump's way of dealing with something. I really don't think he would throw out someone that he really wasn't comfortable with. I think ultimately he wants the wrecking ball. And say what you will, Matt Gaetz, I mean, he blew up the speakership last time around, as we all remember. And maybe it needed blowing up. I don't know. I had some issues with that at the time. But the guy's a wrecking ball, and maybe that's what's needed to clean out DOJ. What are your thoughts on that whole deal?
Well, first of all, John Thune, before becoming Senate Majority Leader, promised Trump, who is the one person who could stop him from becoming the Senate Majority Leader, that he would go into recess and Trump would be able to appoint people in recess appointments. And recess appointments mean that you can be in for up to 2 years without having to be confirmed. And so if in fact Thune keeps that promise, Matt Gaetz is going to be Attorney General for 2 years.
And at least that would be enough to really
take a wrecking ball,
right?
My guess is probably 15 months, but because just the rumor around him is he really wants to be governor of Florida, mm-hmm. and the gubernatorial seat in Florida comes up in 2026. And, you know, in D.C., you think in two-year cycles. And so he knows that he's got to be announcing and running pretty darn early in 2026, if not late 2025. And he can't do that from the AG slot. So if he wants to run for governor of Florida, which has been his ambition, his life ambition, his family are big time players in Florida politics and in the elective politics in Florida, in the state Senate years back. But it's so that's a natural ambition. And so he's got a short timeline if he wants to be able to get that piece of his life done also. But ultimately, think about this. Matt Gaetz is one of the few members of Congress, five or six were there. A bunch of us went down to D.C. jail when we're hearing all these things about the abuses that were occurring at the D.C. jail. People like Louis Gohmert and Matt Gaetz and
Marjorie Taylor Greene, yeah, she was there too.
Right, Laura Boebert was there. So basically people who were seen as outside screamers were there, and they're the ones who confronted the D.C. prison head. They're the ones who demanded access. They're the ones who fought the fight to try to stop the abuses going inside that prison. Now Matt Gaetz is going to be the AG, and he's going to be able to hold those people accountable. He's going to hold the people all the way down the line accountable who've been seeking out grandmas based on facial recognition software who did nothing wrong. They merely went into the Capitol, were being led in by the Capitol Police, and have now spent time in jail because of that. He's going to hold them accountable. He's going to hold the people accountable who violated the freaking law in piling on charges on these people that basically an extreme kind of versions of what the actual law says, applying laws that don't apply to this situation to the J6 defendants and putting them in jail for a really long time.
So, Rick, when it comes right down to it, the hate for Matt Gaetz is really more hate and fear?
It's all swamp protective.
Yeah.
It's all swamp protective. His biggest problem in the Senate, getting confirmed, I don't think he ever will, is because the senators were the ones, the Mitch McConnells of the world, and Mitch McConnell was broken by J6, okay? His institution, he was under attack, okay? He didn't, that's his baby. He doesn't have children. His baby is the Senate, and his institution was under attack. His wife, who I worked for at Department of Labor, quit her job as Secretary of Transportation as a result. Could have served out in 14 more days, but no, she quit. You had McConnell keep passing money out of the Congress to continue the J6 investigations, millions of dollars. So, those who are kind of hardwired to want to defend the status quo in that and are going to defend the status quo on that. They don't care that 90% of the narrative is a lie. And it's so the only way you're going to get this done is by getting somebody in there who is going to swing a machete.
Uh-huh.
And that's what's going to happen.
So Matt Gaetz is going to go all Klingon on the DOJ, right?
Well, he should. Yes. I think he will. The other thing, there's the in DOJ, the people who decide what's declassified and not, regardless of what the president thinks, totally abusing their constitutional privilege, and that's given to them directly from the president and the Constitution. He's going to, if I'm Matt Gaetz, I take the people responsible for that, and I fire about the top three people in that thing, and I put somebody in who's going to declassify documents. So we can get the declassifications, all those things that Trump got arrested for and had his house raided for in Mar-a-Lago, we get those out in the public domain so we see what the hell they were afraid for us to see. So those are some things that he's going to do that I think are important. I think he's going to take on the civil rights end of it and blow up the whole DEI infrastructure and turn the Civil Rights Division into a division that actually defends civil rights. Particularly First Amendment rights for those people who are abused by the state itself, trying to pick what speech is okay and what speech isn't okay. So there's a lot to be done. It's a huge, the nest. The DOJ is the enforcer of DOJ and IRS.
DOJ is the linchpin of political evil in D.C. right now.
That's 100%.
That's what's been 100%. Going. And that's why Gaetz needs to go Klingon on the place, really.
And the challenge that exists, and I saw this happen. I was friends with Jeff Sessions. When I defended Jeff Sessions throughout the whole first part of the administration, Jeff Sessions was a good man and is a good man still. He's a good man. The challenge is he believed in the Senate way of being collegial. Mm-hmm. And he believed that and that dynamic has changed.
Yeah, I don't think Matt Gaetz is not collegial. I don't think he is, right?
That's the point. That's the point. You both can have the same kind of concern about the way civil liberties are being done and everything. But if your approach is collegial, you get put in a corner and you get your corner office, you get your three staff members who sit there and they ignore you the whole time. If you're not collegial, you're marching down to HR and you're saying, I said I want this person fired. What's happened? And that's that's one of the key things that, that Gaetz will do and quite honestly, he'll tell them, sue me. I'm firing you. Sue me. And he'll fire people, let them sue. They might even win. But you put them off in a corner while they're fired, and you get them out of the building, and you say,
You cut the swamp monster off at the knees at that time. Okay. That makes
sense. What I would do is fire people, whether you could fire them or not, and throw their tails out of the building. And let them spend 2 years fighting to get their job back. And if they get their job back, which they probably would, and Congress hasn't changed the law to make it so you can fire them, at that point, I would say, okay, well, here's a nice desk in Fargo, North Dakota. enjoy it.
In other words, Trump may not have a enemies list, but... maybe he does. I don't know.
But America should.
Exactly. And that's where I was going. That's where I was going with this one. America has an enemies list, and maybe Matt is just the guy to go after that. That's quite interesting. And so, year and a half. Yeah, I wasn't thinking about him as a four-year AG, so that part was pretty much where you were going with this. Now, a lot of people were disappointed, a lot of MAGA world disappointed, when Thune ended up getting the nod over Rick Scott. But this was the reasoning behind this, and this is why President Trump, from what I could tell, didn't lift a finger for Rick Scott, even though Rick was quite the Trump loyalist. Fair enough?
If Trump had lifted a finger for Rick Scott and said, and he would have had to say specifically anti-Thune, he would have ended with John Cornyn, okay? And John Cornyn isn't markedly better than Thune. The only advantage of John Cornyn is he's going to be up for election 2026, and Republican senators are markedly more conservative, at least if they come from a conservative state, are markedly more conservative in the 2 years they're up for election than they are in the 4 years that they're not. And so you'd have a 2-year time period where you'd have to pretend he was conservative. That was the advantage of Cornyn. And truthfully, I would have preferred Cornyn. over soon. But the fact is, once again, on the issues, Thune has its advantages, and I'll tell you what they are. Kristi Noem being appointed head of Department of Homeland Security, and some people want Homeland Security gone. There's not 50 votes in Congress to do that. So, you know, we can say what we want, but we had FBI abuses out the nose that everybody knew about, and they overwhelmingly still voted to expand the FBI bill, to give the FBI new building.
I remember it well. It was like a smack my head moment. Forehead.
So there's no. Yep. So understand, within D.C., there is no recognition that you have pro-law enforcement Republicans who essentially say law enforcement can do no wrong, and we need to give them more money because that's the answer to everything. And on the other hand, you have some people on the left who say, you know, I'll throw up some more money, and that gives me a vote that covers me for all the crazy stuff and all the crazy prosecutors I'm supporting. They can't attack me as being anti-law enforcement. I'm giving more money to the FBI. Mm-hmm. So all in all, there's this kind of ugly little group that's actually an ugly big group. And it's the same thing with the defense budget. It's the same trade-off. And pretty much the same people. So the challenge with that is, how do you get any reforms of Homeland Security through the Senate? Well, Kristi Noem replaced John Thune in the House of Representatives when John Thune got elevated to be a senator. Kristi Noem basically spent 6 years, I think was how long she was there. Maybe it was eight. She spent her time having Thune staff doing what Thune wanted. Okay. She has a very good relationship with John Thune. They're from the same state. And so she has, above anybody else, the capacity to get John Thune to act on things that John Thune probably wouldn't act on.
Would this include busting up Homeland Security?
It might. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with it, but it certainly needs to be. But it might include, and I would hope, it include taking out the ability to get social media companies to spy on or to censor people on the behalf of the FBI or behalf of the federal government. Since the federal court, the Supreme Court failed to do so in a case last year or earlier this year. That's something that we might be able to get ripped out of there. It's like one line in the entire law book. It's one line that allows them to do that. So you need to get that, let's say, paragraph out. Might get support for that. Might get support for some FBI reforms, even though FBI is under Homeland Security. Might get support for Secret Service reforms, since that is under Homeland Security. You know, you get sometimes people get picked because they have a greater capacity to get stuff done with the person the one person getting smile and say all the right words.
Yeah, because of the relationships. Okay, a little bit cozy there. I appreciate that. Yeah. Sorry I'm making you cough, Bill. Sorry I'm making you cough, man. I got to tell you.
Man, it's not you, trust me.
Yeah, I know.
It's a three-month battle with a chest cold.
I get it. Now, let me just quickly ask you a couple of things. Oh, my gosh. The amazing amount of hate with Pete Hegseth. And I'm looking at this guy. Great career service. Great educational background. But they say he doesn't have experience, which always translates to me as he's not a swamp monster. Am I right or wrong about that? Can he actually make it through confirmation, you think?
I don't think he'll make it through confirmation. But once again, you've got he may be the one person who they bring up for confirmation and gets voted down. But remember, he'll be recessed appointed. Until he's voted down, he'll still have the job.
Okay.
Is
that going to be the way? Now, Tom Homan, though, now another wrecking ball, though, is Tom Homan, right? And so
he's not confirmable. He's a White House official who's overseeing the border. He's not confirmable. He reports just strictly the president. He doesn't. He's not a cabinet secretary, and so Congress, the Senate, has no say over Tom Homan.
But that is definitely wrecking ball time, right? That's where he.
Yep, absolutely. He's an absolute wrecking ball. He's a cool. He is a tough guy. I've met him a few times. He's. I've yet to see him smile.
I got to tell you, I mean, this is like, bulldog with the bone in his mouth, right? And he's going to. That whole thing about the whole 60 Minutes interview, you remember that one a couple of weeks ago in which they said, well, right. What about the you deport people about the families? And then he says, well, you just deport the kids, stay with the deported parents, that kind of thing. And I guess the point is, though, do you really see it going that direction right now, or is it going after the real deep, dark criminal element first? How do you see that play?
They're going to go after the criminals first. They're going to try to get the gangsters and the Chinese spies and the Chinese military and the various Sinaloa cartel members and other Venezuelan and, Ecuadorian and El Salvadoran gangs that we've let in to run our cities. Those are the people who are going to get targeted first. And those are the people who are going to find themselves on the wrong end of a lot of federal rifles that are going to be dragging them and throwing them back to wherever they came from. And as the czar, I'm confident that the president will heed that the czar's idea. And when we send them back to the countries, we're going to let those countries know that we'll take it as a personal affront if those people end up back in our country.
Rick. Rick, I appreciate that. I'm sorry to throw a lot of things at you. I know you got to get back to your day job. That's why I know I'm running out of time with you.
But I love doing it.
Okay. I noticed that here we are in, first month of the fiscal year, I guess, and Treasury reports that we're already at almost a quarter of a $1 billion deficit for just the month of October, right? It's just an incredible amount of money. And, a year ago it was like 66. Tax revenue went down. Spending went up. And now we have this Department of Government Efficiency, another one which is outside of the government technically. And you have Elon Musk talking about, there's $2 trillion that we can get cut out of here, no problem. Here is the challenge, and I'm just going to toss it at you. About 71% of every dollar that gets written out of the federal government goes to people, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, various other grant stream funding, and all the rest of it. And, there's going to be a big fight to keep that, to keep that going. Where do you think they find they just find $2 trillion whackable out of that right now, given those limitations that I just mentioned?
Well, Congress doesn't appropriate that much. So given that, you would have to eliminate to get $2 trillion, since they're not going to touch – they're really not going to touch – Social Security and that kind of stuff.
You just can't.
He runs into the
expense
of Social Security.
Yeah,
that's a political decision, not an Elon Musk decision. Mm-hmm. So, if you landed every department that is not a mandatory department, that's Social Security, that's giving out food stamps, that's all that stuff. If you ended every other department, if you ended the entire military. You ended the entire EPA, which may not be a bad thing. If you ended the entirety of the federal government, and you ended all the grants they give, so all the education grants and all that, if you ended all that up and you said, we're getting rid of all that, you don't hit $2 trillion.
Wow.
So he probably should have looked at the budget before he's talked.
Okay. All right.
That's all I can say. I mean,
that's what I was thinking, too. I just wanted to find out if my math was working.
Thing, okay. It was the most distressing thing I heard out of him because it showed he hadn't done a top line view of what the situation is and was talking off the top of his head, which is a brilliant guy. And truthfully, there's a lot that could be done there. A lot of real positive that could be done there. But the reality is just like a lot of times people on our side, on my side anyway, will say things like, if we just got rid of foreign aid, we would be able to balance the budget.
Oh, man. And I wish.
You say, yeah, that's like 0.15% of the budget.
It's a rounding error, in essence. You know?
Yeah, it's couch cushion money. So it's a, you know, just this Congress, during this December lame duck session, there's a proposal to spend $100 billion on emergency assistance because of the Hurricane Helene and the one that went through Florida. $100 billion. So that's not pocket change, but that's going to go through this separate from the budget. And it's going to go through, and quite honestly, should go through. But it is but that's beyond the current, couple trillion dollar budget deficit that we run. And it's a, so it's a hard job to try to cut the budget. It's a hard job to try to cut spending. And ultimately, I'm going to say something that people don't like, but ultimately you cannot cut spending unless you cut how much people are getting from the government. And that includes Social Security. It includes the entire gamut of the spending. There is no way to get from here to there. If you want a balanced budget, everybody in America is going to have to tighten the belt. Now, does that seem right? Does that seem fair? I don't know. What I do know is there's not the political will to do that. And as a result, we'll campaign on it, but we don't actually have any intention. I say we. Republicans campaign on it, and very few of them have any intention of doing anything. And that's and the other option on it is you raise taxes dramatically. And the answer to that is usually people say, well, raise taxes dramatically, but raise it on the other guy.
Right.
So, but the fact of the matter is, while there are some very, very, very wealthy people, most of the money in this country is in the pockets of the people who are middle class. Middle and upper middle class is where a vast majority of the money is. And it's very hard to come in and do have anything that's concrete if you say, like the left did, oh, we're only tax people who make above $400,000 a year. Because the truth of the matter is, there's not enough money there to be able to make a sizable difference. If you really need to make a difference, you need to raise the taxes across the board. And Trump is trying to get a third way, which is by increasing tariffs. The left contends that is effectively a tax on the people, and it is to some extent related to by creating higher prices. That is, depending how the tariffs are implemented, that would be true.
But on the other hand, it would also have the side benefit of making it easier for an American business then to hence compete with that import, right?
100%. It would increase it. I'm going to nuance something here, and I know we're almost out of time, but there's two different tariff options that for most of the world, increased tariffs will be passed along to the consumer. The one place where that isn't true, unless the tariffs reach a tipping point where this country can't afford it anymore, is China. Because what China did and we talked about this before, somebody contested it, what I said, and I looked up what the steel costs were, and they went up for about 3 months, and then they went back to the same level. Because China, what they did is they subsidized the steel industry and the aluminum industry more to make it so their steel was still the cheapest on the market.
Yeah, to compensate for that. Yeah, for the tariff.
So essentially, when Donald Trump says tariffs on Chinese goods come directly out of the Chinese government pocket, that was true. And they will continue. Their competitive advantage is they manipulate the currency to make certain they always have the lowest price in the U.S. market. And B, they have they also put government money in to subsidize industries that are essential industries like steel and aluminum for building things, so they can control the price, and their companies are the ones that are shipping it. And so tariffs on China and on essential goods and services from China are That's wise. We have to make our own quality steel. We have to make our own quality aluminum here in America.
Hey, we once did that. Wasn't that long ago?
We did.
Yeah.
Well, we did, but now we're going to sell U.S. steel to Japanese interests. So
you know, it's really going to be interesting.
On that idea.
What's really going to be interesting, though, is to see the pushback from the from the progressive states, such as Oregon, Washington, California, because you look at what's going on in their pension funds, in their state employee pension funds. There's a lot of money in Chinese investments, and something tells me that those public employee retirement systems are not going to be earning nearly as much from those Chinese investments.
Well,
after
one,
this.
One of the reasons why I've been advocating to states across the nation for 3-4 years now that they get out of China and disentangle themselves from China.
Yeah, too much political risk.
Why my personal finances? I told the guy who handles that junk for me. I told him, dude, my only criteria is I'm not in China.
Mm-hmm.
And I added a couple. I added, like, I won't be part of the guys who are pushing DEI and stuff, the banking and BlackRock.
Yeah.
Those kind of guys. So I told him not doing those either. But my one proviso was no China. And some years, no China is a good idea. And some years, no China is a bad idea. The next 4 years, no China is going to be a very good idea.
Yeah, I know that Oregon PERS, though, is very big on China, and because of our Pacific Rim sort of relationship. So it's going to be interesting times, my friend. Thank you from DailyTorch.com.
Don't worry if they fail. They'll just raise taxes on the rest of you. So, you better hope that China's okay. But,
all right. Rick, thank you for it. Like I said, this was a swampier update than ever. I mean, you never fail to please and perform on this, okay? Thank you so much.
I'm your dancing monkey, Bill. Just ask and I'll dance.
DailyTorch.com. Rick Manning, President of Americans for Limited Government. DailyTorch.com. GetLiberty.org.